Blog Talk Radio.
Am I gonna make it big? My love is cheating.
My love is cheating.
Because am I gonna get that right?
Do you call me?
Am I children going to be okay?
Do you see divorce in my future?
You're listening to The Secret of Everything with Dr. Kimberly McGeorge.
I am so honored that Michelle agreed to be with us today. Michelle is the author, among other things, of The 10th Door. And before I go into reading a little bit about her, which she can tell us about herself as well, I'm sure, and maybe I won't even, I might just go straight to the interview. I kind of picked up her book and I thought, oh, this is another one of those spirituality books where, you know, they think they know everything. And Michelle is such a beautiful soul and such a gifted writer. And I wrote her when I first started reading this because I didn't really think I would learn anything new. And as I shared with Shoshana and you guys earlier, she's really kind of rocked my world. So I'm hoping she does the same for you. And I'll share a little bit more how she did that and some things that really hit me as I was reading her book. As a matter of fact, I enjoyed it so much. I kind of left it for myself as a treat to read. So I never even got all the way through because I just had to digest it in tiny little chunks. There is so much in this book. So Michelle is a master yoga and meditation teacher. She's a natural nutritionist, a personal trainer, an author, a presenter, an internationally recognized leader in mind, body, spirit integration. She pioneered the teaching of yoga and meditation for health benefits in the varied fields of medicine, fitness, education, the spa industry, and the corporate wellness arena. She's been teaching yoga, meditation, and breathwork for over 30 years. This is a master. I want you guys to wake up and listen. Things that she says can change your life because I know she's changed mine. So without further ado, I'm going to bring on Michelle. Welcome to The Secret to Everything, Michelle.
Wow. Thank you so much, Dr. Kimberly. What an introduction. It's wonderful to be speaking with you, and I'm so glad that the book had such an impact.
Well, I imagine my guess is, it's just a little suspicion that you get told that quite often.
You know, I'll tell you, I do, and I get people telling me that they've read the book the second time, and the second time they get so much more out of it. Because the first time they get caught up in the story, and although some of the teachings come through, but the second time they begin to really pick up the things that they missed in the first reading. So, yeah, thank you. You know, it was definitely, as I was writing the book, The 10th Door, my teacher, who is no longer alive, Walt Baptiste died about 10 years ago, but he was right at my shoulder. Sometimes I would sit down to, and I knew exactly what I was going to write about that day, and I would sit at my computer and something entirely different came out. And I knew that I was being directed to and really helped on other levels in the writing of it. So,
well, I have a funny little story to kind of tell on Kara, my producer. Kara said, do you have an electronic version of Michelle's book? And I said, no, you know, she sent me a hard copy. And Kara said, well, I'll try to get it off Amazon or at the library. And I've gone through my books many, many, many times in my life. And I'm looking at my bookshelf right now. I'm probably down to about 25, 30 classics because you just don't need to haul that much around your whole life. And I know some people like to have a large library. I've weeded through mine. But as a matter of fact, and Kara can testify to this, Michelle, I said, you know what? I would send it to you, but I'm keeping this book. So if you make it, great, Michelle. So that's how amazing. This is going to be one of my classics and something I refer to and things I share out of for years to come with my clients. So I just want you to know that you have really touched my life. And, you know, as a result, you'll be touching many people's lives, you know, through me as well.
So, I'm so appreciative. I'm so appreciative. And, you know, when I wrote the book, one of my goals was to bring out these teachings that this incredible teacher taught me. But I had been inspired in my life through books like The Autobiography of a Yogi, which is the great Paramahansa Yogananda and the story of his training in India with his teacher. Another one was Dan Millman's book, The Way of the Peaceful Warrior. And that is a story about his interaction with his teacher. And through the interactions with the teachers, a lot of tremendous information and spiritual truths come out. And I just find it much more interesting to learn through a story form. So that's what I really wanted to do. And it's so funny because I tried to write other books and tried to sell them, and nothing seemed to work. And I realize now I was trying to write a book to sort of get my name out there. And the spirit had other plans. And my job was to really pass on these powerful teachings for people. And evidently, it's come across very well. And so I thank you so much for your appreciation of it. It really makes it all really worthwhile, all that work.
Yeah, and it is. It is. I'm on my second mini book. Nothing like yours, but even a mini lighter book, it is, as you know, a lot of work. So could you kind of, for those, of course, I have read most of your book, but a lot of our listeners haven't. So could you kind of start at the beginning of your spiritual journey and lead into how you even got to the place where you would be writing a book?
Surely. Actually, I was raised in the Midwest, in Cleveland, and in a very sort of Midwestern normal upbringing, whatever that is. But I had an unusual circumstances that my dad was a great flutist, and he played flute with the Cleveland Orchestra for 40 years, flute and piccolo, and he was my flute teacher. And in many ways, in those early years when I was learning to play the flute, he would spend a lot of time with me on breathing exercises. And I realized that this was a foreshadowing of the breath work that I would learn later on in yoga. It was a sort of a fluke, if you believe in flukes, that I ended up on the path that I'm on right now. But in a way, it was something that I've been preparing for all my life, unconsciously. And one day I was lying in bed in Cleveland, preparing to go to graduate school, and I woke up and I realized that my life was going in a totally wrong direction. It wasn't something that I really wanted, although I had made all these plans to do that, to go to graduate school and stay in Cleveland. Instinctively, I knew that I had to leave. And so I picked up the phone and called my father, who was going to be leaving with the Cleveland Orchestra the following week to play the Hollywood Bowl. And I asked him if he could get me on the plane. And I explained to him what was going on, and he knew me pretty well. And he arranged for me to get on the plane with the Cleveland Orchestra and go to California. And I was being drawn to meet my spiritual destiny, which manifested in my stumbling into a yoga center one day and thinking, oh, it might be nice to take a yoga class. And I went, took a yoga class, what I thought would be a yoga class, and it really turned out to be a lot of meditation and concentration. And this was the man who ended up becoming my spiritual guide and teacher for the next 30 years. I had a profound experience in that class, and I knew that there was a lot more than I'd ever learned in Cleveland, and I decided to pursue the teachings of this particular teacher, although I didn't really think I'd stay too long. I was in my mid-20s, and this was sort of an adventure. But within a couple of weeks after doing these practices, the classic yoga practices, not the yoga practices that are so popular in the United States today, not the physical workout aspect of yoga, but my teacher, Walt Baptiste, was a master of Raja Yoga. And Raja Yoga is also called the mental yoga, and it's learning to get hold of our chattering minds. In the meantime, there was some posture work involved, a lot of breath work, which is a real key, and I'm sure you remember that comes out quite a bit in the book, the importance of breathing and different practices to help open up the breath capacity. But I really learned a lot about my mind, and that was really one of the most important teachings that I learned through this particular school of yoga, was the mind is so powerful. And with the power of the mind and the power of the breath, we can accomplish anything in our life, including, and I do a lot of teaching these practices to people who are very ill, because with the power of the mind and the power of the breath, millions of cells can be changed in an instant, but we have to train our minds. So it was through this period, there was 2 years in San Francisco where I worked in the Baptiste restaurant. They had a huge complex. They had a health food store and a gym. Walt Baptiste himself had been a former Mr. America, and his wife was a great dancer, so there was a dance studio. There was a health food restaurant and a boutique. And it took up almost the whole city block in San Francisco. And I started working in the restaurant and in exchange for yoga classes. And after 2 years of during this period I went through tremendous transformation as a result of the practices on every level, I was invited to go down to the Baptiste retreat in Central America, in El Salvador. Now, Walt's wife, Magaña, was born in El Salvador, and they had been looking around in Central America, South America, and Hawaii, looking for a retreat center that would really resonate with their work. And they ended up purchasing some land on the ocean in El Salvador, and I was invited to go down, and it was still being built at the time. So for your listeners, if you can imagine a 28-year-old fresh off the boat from Cleveland in the middle of a Central American beach retreat, no phones, sometimes electricity, no Spanish, and I was in charge of 25 machete-carrying workers who would show up every mm-hmm. morning to work on building the retreat. And what I learned was this, that when we follow our hearts and when we take risks, you know, the willingness to take a risk, if it means following your heart, that the world, the universe will support us in ways that we can't even imagine when we start off. And so that's what happened to me. Now, I spent 4 years in Central America at this retreat. Much of it was in solitude. And Walt Baptiste gave me certain practices to do. So he would come down for a couple weeks and sometimes bring a group. And then he would go back to San Francisco, and I would be alone for 3 or 4 months. And he would give me a series of tasks. And, for example, the first time he came to he left me alone in El Salvador at the retreat, he gave me a sheet of paper, and on the sheet of paper were 10 yoga poses that he asked me to learn how to hold for 1 hour each, and that he would be back in 3 months. And so I had 3 months to learn how to hold those yoga poses. And I'll tell you, it was what I learned was that it wasn't the physical challenge as much, because the body, you could start off with 3 minutes in a particular posture, and then you can go up to 5 minutes, and then you can go up to 6 minutes, and then your body gets stronger and stronger. But what you have to deal with is your mind, to be still in one position and deal with the mind and learn to use the tools to help get hold of the mind. And what I saw inside myself was a tremendous amount of compromise. Like, at first, I loved the challenge, and it seemed like it would be a really cool thing to be able to do that. But then, after a few minutes, I began to see my mind saying, why am I doing this? This isn't that important. This is too hard. And all of those other thoughts would come to the mind. Well, those thoughts are our saboteurs. Those are the kinds of thoughts that really hold us back from breaking through some of our self-imposed limitations so that we can really express who we really are. And a lot of that comes from really getting hold of our minds. And one of the most important ways of doing this is through meditation. So in my work, after so many years of teaching now, 37 years actually, I more and more help people work on the breath and the mind, those two things. And that a few minutes of this kind of work can really have a profound effect on how one feels inside oneself in awareness and consciousness.
Well, it's funny, Michelle, because one of the things that you've really changed for me, and I shared this with Shoshana, I don't know if you were on when I said this, but I, you know, been practicing naturopathic medicine and energy medicine for almost 25 years, and I have always kind of thrown out the breath work and the body work. And reading your book, it's kind of like, you know, some people read the Bible, they get convicted. I got, like, convicted. My guys are like, girlfriend, we need a new program, because I do have very highly evolved psychic and intuitive abilities. I do have a high consciousness. I do have a high vibration. And they're saying, well, why settle there? Let's take it to the next level. And it's interesting because when I was five, I actually took my first yoga class when I was five. And it's funny because even as a five-year-old, I remember being in these crazy positions, and it seemed like for a long time. And this was with older people. This was not a five-year-old yoga class. I don't know what my mother was thinking. That's another show. But I just remember, Michelle, watching the clock. But you know what's funny? And I remember this. There came a point where I stopped watching the clock, and I went other places, even as a five-year-old. And so it's funny because they kind of brought me full circle, you know, where that was torturous to a five-year-old. Even then, I got a glimpse of kind of what it could be or what it was meant to be. And so I just love that you opened up that, and it's funny because you call it the 10th door, but you literally opened up this whole world to me again, and I just have to thank you for that.
Thank you. Yeah, and people, you know, people have these preconceived notions about what yoga is because, again, there's so much physical in the United States, however, taking care of the body is very important on the spiritual path, as you know, because it's the vehicle that we walk around in this world with, and if we are in a state of illness or imbalance, trying to project spiritual clarity is very challenging. So to take care of the physical body, and in doing so, we also are taking care of ourselves mentally and emotionally as well. So it's a package, definitely. And it's finding that balance, which is challenging because it's not like we find a point of balance and then we just stay there for the rest of our lives. It's like every day we have to really look at where am I right now, what would be a good thing for me to do, maybe just in the morning, what practice would be good to bring up my energy if things are a little low, or more clarity, maybe the mind is fuzzy, what kind of things am I going to eat today, you know, to help me have optimal energy as I go through the day. And it's checking in a lot. It's a lot of checking in. And some people might think that's selfish, but actually when we come from a state of balance, we have such a profound effect on everything and everyone else. And so it's almost a responsibility that we have for to ourselves as well as to our world.
Michelle, I have a question for you. I've always been interested in trying yoga. I've never done it. Do you find that more men are getting into yoga than in the past?
You know, it's sort of a wide question because I would say more people are. You know, they estimate there's somewhere between 18 and 20 million practitioners of yoga. But the idea is what aspect of yoga are you talking about? Are you talking about a physical class? Are you talking about more of a spiritually oriented class? I would say that it's probably about the same, maybe a little bit more overall. I think the estimate is it's about 20% men and 80% women. And go ahead.
I'm just kidding. There's so many types of yoga. I thought there was only one or two types, and I never realized there was all these other forms of yoga.
Uh-huh. Well, actually, you know, it's interesting. Raja Yoga, which is the yoga that I study, is inclusive of all yogas.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, Raja Yoga includes the physical postures, but it also includes the mental aspect and the spiritual practices as well. So if we're going to look at hatha yoga. Hatha yoga is any yoga that involves the physical postures, which would be practically all of the yoga that's out there today. So there's, there's Iyengar yoga, there's Ashtanga yoga, there's hot yoga, there's, a range of yoga. All of that would be considered to be hatha yoga, which falls under the category of Raja yoga. So the difference between a hatha yoga class and a Raja yoga class is the hatha yoga pretty much sticks to the physical postures with some emphasis on breathing, but the Raja yoga includes and emphasizes getting hold of the mind, introspection, and meditation. So it's we release the tension from the physical body when we do the postures, the physical postures, and the goal is so that we can start to work on deeper levels of ourselves. Because if we are holding a lot of tension in the physical body, energy is held in the physical body, and we're not able to dive deeply within because our energy is stuck in the physical. So learning how to truly relax the physical body, and sometimes to relax the physical body, we have to move it and stretch it and release some of that deeply held tension, which is also mental tension, because you can't separate the body and the mind. I was just going to say that about 30 years ago, I went to my teacher and I said, why are so many more women than men involved in yoga? And he said to me, and this is a big, strong man who was a Mr. America, too, he said, it's the male ego. But he said, when a man gets into yoga, they're more likely to go all the way with it. So I thought that was really fascinating.
Yeah, I do regular meditation, but I wasn't sure what the difference between going to, a meditation class versus a yoga class. What is different?
Ultimately, the definition, according to Patanjali, who's the father of yoga, the definition of yoga is, yoga is the cessation of the fluctuations of the mind.
Mm-hmm.
Yoga is the cessation of the fluctuations of mind. So yoga is meditation. And the postures are only 600 to 800 years old. Isn't that amazing? Yoga is 5,000 years old, and the posture work, the physical posture work, is only 600 to 800 years old. It's relatively new. So for over 4,000 years, yoga was meditation. Now it's got that whole aspect of it, unfortunately, is getting lost. But you are definitely a yogi if you're sitting down to meditate on a regular basis. Now, if you have an interest in learning the postures, which is great because they're very healthy, they're balancing, they balance the energies of left and right, they can be strengthening, and they're also great for the internal organs. People forget about that part. They think of the muscular system and the cardiovascular system, but also those internal organs have a tremendous nerve flow, pranic flow, move into the organs for the health and well-being of those deeper parts of ourselves. Did that answer your question?
Yeah, it did. But now where would I find a place that does this type of yoga?
Well, I usually suggest to people, because oftentimes I work down at Rancho La Puerta, or I'll teach down there, which is it's the number one spa in the world right now. It's in Tecate, Mexico. And so I get people from all over the world, who, especially the United States, who ask me, where can I find this kind of yoga? And I suggest that people take 3 or 4 different classes with different people. So you get a sense of whether you connect with a particular teacher or style. And ask in advance, is this pretty much a physical class, or is there a spiritual aspect that's brought into it? Or let them know that that's what you're interested in. And wherever you decide to go, there are yoga centers and there are gyms that have yoga too. And I, for years, when I first started off teaching in the world, I taught at gyms, but partly it was because of my own training, my background in weight training. But I was very comfortable in the gym setting, and I included meditation in my classes, and people were very open to it. So even in gyms, you'll find some really strong, good teachers, but you have to sort of look around.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Kareem, did you have a question? I thought you talked.
Yeah, I was about to ask about the breath, and I know about yoga too. I'm very interested in it. I haven't taken a class yet, but I'm interested more in. I meditate frequently, but I haven't been into the the stance part of it, like getting into those stances.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that increases, you know, flexibility for, like, athletes or anything, and it's good for muscular flexibility also. But I was wondering, like, the powers of the breath. Like, I notice with myself, when I get a little bit frustrated or anything, I'll notice I start taking deeper breaths and it calms me down. So I remember you saying the if you could control your mind and your breath, you could basically control everything. So could you go deeper?
Yeah. No, actually, you know, there's a great master of Raja Yoga, an Indian master, who said, "He who controls the breath controls the universe."
Wow.
Or I like to say, she who controls the breath controls the universe. But that's a very powerful statement.
Love it.
What does he mean by that? Your breathing patterns, we all have habits of breathing, and we all have habits of thinking. So I'm just going to back up a little bit. Do you know how many thoughts that you think in a day? Take a guess.
Millions.
Millions, okay, that's a lot. Actually, psychology has come up with a number, and they say that we think about 60 to 90,000 thoughts in a day. So let's say 60,000 thoughts in a day. 90% of those thoughts you thought yesterday.
Really?
Yeah. We tend to repeat the same things over and over and over. We've got this chattering mind that's going on all the time in the background, and it's going over the same material for the most part. That's why we keep recreating the same things in our lives, because thought is creative, as we, you know, you guys are all on the same page with that, I'm sure, and we are creating our reality out of our thoughts. So we tend to think the same thing over and over again. So we have these habits of thinking. Now, we also have habits of breathing, and they are totally intertwined with one another. Your breathing habits and your mental habits are so interconnected you can't separate them. So what happens is when we start changing our breathing patterns and opening up our breathing apparatus in new ways, breathing more fully and completely, we begin to clear out some of that programming that we have. And it's conditioning. You know, we have this tremendous mental conditioning that we're trying to break out of to really experience ourselves in our full potential as spiritual human beings. And when we can start to change those breathing patterns, we let go of some of this hard, fast thought patterns that we have and open up to new creative thoughts and ideas that come to us. So the breath is very important. And there are so many breathing exercises in yoga. It's called pranayama. And prana is life force. Mm-hmm. It's like chi. I mean, I think everybody's familiar with the Chinese version of qi, of life force. Well, prana is the Indian or the yoga version. And prana is, you can actually draw more prana into your system through conscious breathing. So there are breathing practices to help lift your energy, and there are breathing practices to help calm everything down. There are breathing exercises that you can learn to actually send breath into the cells for healing. And there's breathing exercises if your mind is in a turmoil and you keep obsessing on a situation over and over. There are breathing exercises to move yourself out of that. So there's a tremendous body of work. And actually, psychology admits that the body of work of the breathing in yoga is far superior to any other body of work regarding the breath. So breath is life for the physical body, but also it's the subtle aspect of breath that we use to move inside of ourselves in meditation. So we have the gross physical breath that keeps us alive on the planet and that we use in exercise. And then we have that subtle breath that when we become very still and the breath becomes very calm, then we can use that to move into our innermost center of being. So the breath is a real key.
Wow. Now, as far as the flexibility goes, you know, like I was saying, as far as athletes and everybody, would you advise some athletes to start taking yoga? Because, you know, they use their breath a lot, you know, running around. And flexibility is also is great for exercising and doing physical activities. So.
Right, and injury prevention. Injury prevention. You know, my teacher's son is Baron Baptiste. I don't know if you've heard of Baron or not. He's a very well-known teacher, yoga teacher on the East Coast. He used to be the yoga coach for the Philadelphia Eagles football team. Mm. And this was probably 15 years ago. A lot of the professional teams do have yoga coaches on staff and work with them in their flexibility because there's no question that there's injury prevention with greater levels of flexibility. And we're just looking on a physical level. But on another level, a level of focus and concentration, which is needed by athletes, of course, my cousin actually is a what he calls, he has his PhD, but he's a sports psychologist. And he works for like several of the major baseball teams. And he goes in there and works with them on mental attitude and working on the mind to help them not have anything in their thought pattern that would not be of success. And I asked him, how much of what you do is yoga? And he looked at me and he said, it's all yoga. Mm. He just doesn't call it that. He's a sports psychologist is what he calls it, but he says it's all yoga. So on the mental side of things, practices are borrowed from yoga for sports performance, and on the physical side, also the injury prevention, and also greater performance. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Kareem. Sorry.
No, I was gonna go somewhere totally different.
Yeah, I'm gonna go somewhere. Well, I'm gonna stay on the breath thing for a moment. What would you say to someone who holds their breath? Like, what does that mean if you're always, always, always holding your breath? And then how could your life change if you started to have more conscious breath work?
Mm-hmm. I would say my first reaction in hearing that question is that somebody is holding on to a fear. It could be something from childhood. It's interesting, Dr. Kimberly, I have worked with many, many women who I've observed in the gym because, as you know, I was a former former Mr. America, I was going to say. I was a former competitive bodybuilder as well, and I worked in the gym, and I used the gym to help people learn how to breathe more freely and more openly. And several women have confided in me over the years that they had been abused as children, and I started to notice a pattern in their physical bodies. And usually their chests were not developed. I don't mean breast, but I mean their chest capacity was very tiny. Mm. And that's because when you're in a state of fear, you don't breathe fully. And how we breathe has an effect on how our physical body forms. So people who are very shallow breathers that don't open up their chest, oftentimes it's because they're living as children in with some fear issues. So when I work with people who do have problems with their breathing, I'm gentle with it at first. But one of the practices I love to give them is what's called the three-part breath, or the complete yogic breath. And in that breath, you learn how to first breathe in the lower abdomen and then direct the breath to the diaphragm and then finally to the upper chest. So you learn how to breathe and open up in all three parts. And then as you exhale, you first exhale from the chest, then the diaphragm, and then out the abdomen. And then you breathe in, abdomen, diaphragm, chest. It's like a wave going up and down the body. And you can lie down and do it. It's great to do it in the morning when you first wake up, or at night, or any time, really, to get a new habit of breathing.
I just have
like a very short paragraph on breath that I wanted to read from my book.
Yeah, please.
And yeah, it's the first day when I went into the gym sort of kicking and screaming because it was the last thing I wanted to do. I was there for yoga. I wasn't interested in weights. And my teacher, who Norman, who is a figure throughout the book, a real mentor for me, he said to me, in the gym, we want to increase your breathing capacity. Breath is life, and we want to draw more life force into the system. As you gracefully coordinate lifting and breathing, you'll increase your chest capacity and your pranic energy levels. But I already know how to breathe, I protested. I'd been doing it since the moment I was born. Nothing to it. Yes, he responded patiently, but you have a habit of breathing that keeps you at a certain level physically and mentally. It's intertwined with your habits of thinking and your emotional reactions. When you learn to breathe more fully, you will also expand your mind and your perceptions of life, so your awareness, and it will help you in your meditation practice. It's all related. So I think that sort of sums it up.
Yeah, I love that, and that's what really convicted me. I think it's hard, though, Michelle, to find a teacher depending where you live. Possibly. So what would you recommend? Do you really have to be taught? Should you just do what comes naturally? Should you research on the internet? I think you should write a follow-up book of, like,
well, you know,
Well,
I would love to do that. And once this book is firmly out in the world, I plan on continuing. But I would say I made some CDs specifically for people that want to do the practices that can't be with me.
Ah,
and
okay.
They're called the Inner Practices of Yoga. And one of them is relaxation and meditation. And then one of them is self-healing. And that's where I teach a chakra balancing exercise, 10 minutes of meditation, and then 20 minutes of learning how to direct the mind and breath into the cells for healing. And I've had so many women who've gone through chemotherapy for breast cancer tell me that that CD really helped get them through their chemotherapy. And it's helpful, actually, for anything anybody's going through, whether it's serious or not so serious. And then there's a Yoga Nidra CD, which my husband did. And Yoga Nidra, Nidra in Sanskrit means sleep. And there are the yogis learn to move into a deep state of rest where we're more at rest than when we're sleeping. But the mind is very clear and awake. And in that state, you can access the subconscious mind and learn things. You can just absorb things just unbelievably in that space. So I did this, and what I did was about 8 years ago, I was sat down in meditation, and as clear as anything, my teacher's voice came to me, and he had died a few years before, and he said, you must go back to El Salvador, which I hadn't been to in years. So the Baptiste family still owns the retreat, although nobody's down there because they've had a lot of, political situations. They have a guardian there. But within 1 week, I was on a plane, and I went down to El Salvador. I was there by myself, and it was so interesting because a lot of the workers had grown up, and their kids were now adults because I hadn't been there in so long. But what I did was I spent 3 weeks and wrote the scripts to these CDs as I sat by the ocean. And it was very powerful, actually. And I came back and went into a studio and made the CDs. So they were really inspired from this really potent place. And so I would recommend to people the CDs, and then there's a DVD my husband did that's great for the yoga practice, the physical practice. And it's actually, when you first start off, you definitely want some guidance, and especially with the breathing. So hopefully I've created something that will help people. And those can be found on my website, which is rajayogis.net. RAJAYOGIS.net. So.
Wow. Well, one of the things I wanted to touch on that I kind of forgot about again until I read your book, and then I remembered, because I'm pretty sensitive to the energies of food and what's life-giving and what isn't. But one thing I like that you brought out in your book was the energy that it's not just the nature of the food or the energy of the food or where it was grown, but the energy of how it's prepared. Could you speak a little bit about that? I really like that.
Oh, I would love to. Did you ever see that movie, Like Water for Chocolate?
I love that movie. I love that movie.
Well, the movie's like that. And for those of you who don't know what it is, it's about a woman who's a chef. And it's a Mexican movie, really brilliant. And she, as she cooked, if she was in a state of crying, if she was really, really sad and she was crying as she cooked, what happened was when she served the people who were at her table, they would start crying as they ate the food. And so, and if she was like really happy and she was cooking and really dynamically happy, that would happen to the people who ate the food. So what I learned when I first started at the Baptiste restaurant was we were taught that what you're thinking while you prepare the food goes into the food, and then when you serve the food, the thoughts that you're thinking as you serve the food also have an influence on what happens to people when they eat the food. So I guess to simplify it, you could say, you know, mother's home cooking is always the best, because mother has a lot of love, and we're eating the love that she put into the food. And I also hear people say when they eat in a restaurant all the time, like people who are working on the road, they just don't feel right after a while. And so we are taking on and into ourselves what has gone into the food before in its preparation. And Baptiste restaurant had little signs to remind us. So in front of the chef's stove, you know, there was a mantra, you know, peace, harmony, well-being. And then where the waitresses and waiters served the tea in this little tea room, there was, you know, reminder, what are you thinking? You know, what are you putting into the food? And so that was a very important part of the yoga practice in serving people. And we don't think about that so much. And the other thing is that we don't think about a lot is what we're thinking about when we're eating the food. What state of are we in emotionally when we're eating? Mm. Because we take that into ourselves. And I have actually I have a friend who's a yoga teacher that when people start talking about their illnesses and problems, physical problems at dinner, she says, no organ recitals at dinner. I thought that was pretty cute. But it's true that if you're talking about, oh, so-and-so just has got this terrible disease while you're having dinner with people, people are taking those thoughts into themselves as they eat the food. So it's very important to be, you know, sort of upbeat and keeping the energies lifted as we're eating and dining with others.
Yeah, you know, I'm never eating fast food again.
That's good.
But back to what you were talking before about breathing And, you know, when a woman's in labor, they teach you how to breathe. And I never put those two together, but that was a pretty good analogy with your talking about breathing and pain and
Absolutely.
Making yourself feel better.
Absolutely. No question about it. And, you know, there's a lot of yoga out there for pregnancy, too, for women who are pregnant. And they learn in the yoga classes different breathing practices that can be used for their labor. And, of course, there's many different methods. The Lamaze method is out there and different breathing techniques. But to really get hold of the breath can make a big difference in delivery or as well as dealing with pain.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Okay, Michelle, could you run through again your website and how we could buy your CDs and where we could purchase your book and the name of your book? But I do have one question before you do that, before we let you go. I have one question. Do you meet your husband in the book? Because I'm not done, and I'm like two-thirds of the way through.
Oh, good. You know, actually, at the end of the book, there's an epilogue, and in the epilogue, I talk about meeting my husband.
Okay.
And actually, Walt Baptiste married us. So
aww.
I talk a little bit about, I talk a little bit about that. And, so, and my husband and I teach together, and we lead retreats all over the world, and our joy is to pass on the practices that lead to transformation.
I'm not letting you off that easy. You have to tell me the story now of how you met your husband, Michelle. I can't wait.
Oh, okay. No, this is actually this is a good story. I was I had been on staff at Rancho La Puerta for 3 years, and worked for Rancho La Puerta and the Golden Door, which are spas. And I had moved to Northern California, but I would go back and teach there for a couple weeks every year. And I was down there teaching, and one of the women who works there said to me, you know, I have this friend, he's into yoga, and I think you would really like him. And so I thought, what's his name? And she said, well, his name is Mehrad Nazari. And so I said, oh, and then I said, you know, where is he from? And she explained to me that he had been born in Iran and that he had been in this country for a long time. And I thought, oh. Mm-hmm. And it was sort of cool because my friend, this woman who was fixing us up, her partner was from Israel, and these two men were best friends. And I thought, oh, that's interesting, an Iranian and Israeli, you know, best friends. I like that. I thought that was sort of cool. And so we met, and I thought he was very nice, but really not my type. And then after a couple months, I realized that this was a really extraordinary person. And we were married like in 4 or 5 months. And he began studying with Walt. He would fly up to San Francisco and take some of Walt's meditation classes. And he realized the power that was behind these particular teachings. And so we've been married now for 20 years and teaching together for that long. So I'm very thankful. The Rancho La Puerta has played a very important part in my life. And for people who haven't been there, it's a very special place, very special place. So did that answer your question, Dr. Kimberly?
Okay, I have one more little piece of the question. How did you know? Is it because you are so highly conscious and in tune with who you are and what you desire to have? How did you know that this was the person, you know, that you could go ahead and commit your life to?
Well, at first, as I said, I didn't. I really thought that he would be a wonderful friend. But then, as I got to know him more, I just realized what a high caliber person he was. And then I fell in love with him. And, you know, once that happens, there's really no turning back. And so, and also, for me, it was important that there was, it's not important for everybody, because you can be on the, you know, very strongly on the spiritual path and be married to someone who is a wonderful supporter, but not at that place at this time in his evolution, his or her evolution. And that can work very well. I see it work very well, as long as the other partner is supportive of what the person's doing spiritually. But for me, it was always important that that person that I would finally connect with would be on the spiritual path. And so it was beautiful that that happened. And it's been very powerful because we have the male and the female when we teach.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, we just finished a teacher training program, an 8-month teacher training program with 30 people in the group and taught them how to teach. And that was something that's probably, I would say, besides my book, the most important piece of work that I've done. Because to pass on these teachings and then see other people able to pass them on. And it's more than the teachings. It becomes, there's a lineage of energy that moves through, and there's a transmission that can then move through to, I guess you could say, another generation. And hopefully that's what my teacher did for me. And I did want to mention one last thing about the book, is
sure.
that because a lot of people are missing this. When you get to the end of the book, on the next page, there's a paragraph that says the secret chapter. And you go to the secret chapter on my website, and there's a special word you have to type in that's in the book, a password. And then you go to the most important chapter in the book, and that's the secret chapter. So some people finish the book, and they miss the secret chapter. So
wait,
I'm telling
minute,
you this
wait
now.
Wait a minute. That is
when
so
you,
cool. Like,
when you get to
chapter,
the last page, there's a secret chapter on my website.
Oh,
yeah.
My gosh.
But you can only get there through the book. I mean, somebody can't go onto my website and find the secret chapter. They have to follow the directions in the book.
Oh, I love that. That's
isn't
awesome.
That great?
I do. Yeah. Okay. So what does the 10th, tell me really quick, what does the 10th door mean? And then give us your website, and we're going to have to wrap it up, although we could talk to you forever. You're so wonderful.
I know. It's been wonderful. Well, the 10th door, the title of the book is The 10th Door, An Adventure Through the Jungles of Enlightenment. And the 10th door, well, there are 9 physical openings in the body, the eyes, the ears, the nose, the mouth, and you can count the rest. But there's a secret opening at the crown of the head, known as the 10th door, which is also the crown chakra. And it's from this place that the people are able to actually learn how to spiritually move out of the physical body. And the subtitle, The Jungles of Enlightenment, An Adventure Through the Jungles of Enlightenment. The jungles are the jungles of our minds, our belief systems and thought patterns that hold us back from expressing our true potential. But it's also the jungles of El Salvador, where I had much of this amazing adventure. My website is www.rajayogis, because there's two of us, RajaYogis. .net. And my name, my pronunciation of my name is the French pronunciation. It's Michelle Hebert, H-E-B-E-R-T.
Wonderful.
Well,
thank you so much. We had such a good time.
Thank you so much. And I just can't tell you what it means that you really got my book.
Oh,
I mean,
absolutely.
You did. You own it, and it's a part of you, and I hope one day our paths cross and we meet one another.
Oh, I would love to meet you. And I just want you to know this is a book that, you know, my daughters are going to read and my grandchildren are going to read. And I just think that's amazing to write such, you know, something so timeless and, you know, that can affect so many lives. So thank you for showing up, as I teach my clients, as you, and for sharing your journey with us. And many blessings to you.
Thank you so much, Dr. Kimberly.
Have a good night, Michelle.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
All right, everybody. Well, I have a friend of mine, and his name is Eek Ball, and I've been on his show, and a couple of you might have heard it, or the thousands of you might have heard it, I'll say that. But he has written some music that I'm going to share with you that kind of goes along with what Michelle's talking about. So it's a couple minutes, and if you would like to hear more of him, he has a Blog Talk Radio show August 16th. At 3 p.m., he will be discussing health on that date. You can go to blogtalkradio.com/Iqbal, I-Q-B-A-L. And his website is, well, I'll give you his website after I play the song. I'm going to go ahead and play this one.
saw the sunlight, light shine on those trees. I saw the moonlight touch those leaves. Whoa, I couldn't believe the absolute. Shut up.
I thought I was talking the whole time, you guys. Somebody should have said something. Oh, my goodness. Thank you guys for listening. It was a wonderful show. Thank you, Walt, for your wonderful questions. Thank you, Kara, I guess. Thank you, Kareem, for being here and for participating. And thank you, everyone, for listening. Kareem, you can take us out. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Hey, everybody.
Go ahead, Kareem.
Be sure to catch us next week. Check out all the archives. Also, you can catch Dr. Kim at Serene Wellness at Twitter, Serenity Natural Wellness on Facebook, and www.secrettoeverything.com. Good night, everybody.
Thanks for listening on Secrets to Everything with Dr. Kimberly McGeorge. Listen every Wednesday night, Eastern Standard Time from 7 to 8 p.m. on Blog Talk Radio.